That sound means that it's time for Climate Thursday. It is 4:30 on Thursday. We like to reserve this time to discuss climate and sustainability in the Chapel Hill Carborough area. And we are joined now in the studio by a very special guest. Veteran North Carolina journalist Kirk Ross is in the house. Kirk, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for coming in today.
You bet. You bet. Thanks for your interest in this and your climate stuff.
Yes, it's I like to be purposeful about talking about the climate. Sometimes it seems like people are just kind of letting it go by without thinking about it too much, and I didn't want to fall into that myself here. So
right.
Try to talk about it every Thursday, and you caught our attention. We published a essay that you wrote about the coal plant on Cameron Avenue that UNC owns. So wanted to ask first, like, what led you to write about this subject?
Well, I've been a reporter in this community for a long time. I was a local reporter for the Chapel Hill News in the 90s and News and Observer, and then and had the Carborough Citizen, and also worked for the Indy. So I've had a lot of different moments where I've interacted with that plant and why it's there. When they were renovating it, they had some problems with the coal stacks. They caught on fire and they had to rebuild them. That was in the 90s, I believe, or early 2000s. And then I was there when the UNC announced that it was going to get off coal by 2020. And then I was there when they kind of decided not to, or whatever they did. So I've had a lot of interactions with that plant. And for the last 10 years, I've been mainly based at the legislature as a member of the Capitol Press Corps, covering environmental issues for a group called Coastal Review, and also as a hurricane reporter and a politics reporter for the Washington Post. And, you know, I covered hurricanes here. I covered the two big natural disasters, and also covered climate change and how the university climate change and how the legislature's attitudes on it have changed over the years. I think in this town, people still think that the legislature is living back in 2012 and the whole sea level rise controversy. I actually broke that story working for this small outfit. It was one of the first things I wrote for them. And, you know, those days are over. Two major natural disasters, and you don't have to convince people that, you know, they might not want to call it climate change, but what some of these diehard legislators I would talk to would say, well, Kirk, we know the climate is changing. And you know,
subtle nuance there.
it's a nuance, but now there's more money, there's more effort being put into resilience, into doing things before storms happen rather than cleaning up after, and hope we don't get hit again. And so, I took a little time off from climate reporting because it's an incredibly depressing thing to do sometimes, and that's a kind of a thing among climate reporters, is how do we keep ourselves sane. So I decided I'd do something like, you know, a little mellower, like cover the U.S. Senate race, which I've done for the last year here in North Carolina, and that was not an uplifting experience either. And so I have a little downtime, and I've been thinking about this. And my father, who is an old power company guy, recently said to me, when I told him they're still burning coal at UNC, he said, "They're still doing that?" He got up out of his chair, 94-year-old power company fella. And, you know, so I've been wanting to kind of think about what, you know, things don't make sense for a reason, you know. When you cover the legislature, you get that as a reporter, that there's always something there that you don't know. If something doesn't make sense, you just don't know all the parts or all the dynamics.
Right. This isn't like a random occurrence. There's something that hasn't been revealed yet that's causing this to happen.
Right. And so I started looking at what are some of the structural issues that are preventing it. And really, there's a huge attitude issue that I think this town shares with the university in a way, our elected leaders. And, you know, I know that they're frustrated about it, but there's this sort of throwing up of hands and saying, well, we can't get them to change. They're too locked in. Except nobody's really taken a good hard look at this. Nobody's really done the kind of opportunity cost study of what would it be like if there wasn't a coal plant there. One of the things that I'm worried about is, you know, and I say this in the piece, and I'll make these several bullet points real quickly here, is coal use is going to end. The university is going to get around to it the easy way or the hard way. The international community doesn't like that this major research university is burning coal. It looks bad. It is bad. There's one study I saw was 35,000 tons of coal ash a year that's being shipped from Chapel Hill to a mostly a minority poor county in Virginia, where it's going in an unlined pit. I just read a Reuters story that said 40 tons a day. So it up to that dump. And that's 1 ton, that 35,000 ton figure is 1 ton for every undergrad, every grad and professional, every faculty member, and every employee at the university, 1 ton per a year. And that's just the coal ash. And then there's the plume itself, you know, and the asthma rates in this town are, you know, elevated because of it. There are kids in this town who grew up with asthma because of that plant. You can't deny that. It's just the way it works. And so coal use will end. The problem is what happens after that. The path of least resistance for the university is to go ahead and convert to natural gas, keep a facility at Cameron Avenue, maybe do some biofuels. As an environmental reporter, I can tell you there's no biofuel that's really truly what you would call green.
Right, you're still burning
something.
You're still burning something.
You're burning something, and all those, it's all dubious. The math on that, on a lot of renewables, can be dubious. So what happens is you miss this key opportunity, and the opportunity is to repurpose the site into something that makes sense. You know, I would argue housing, community center. That's a conversation that the community should have, that the towns should have, that the county should have. If you repurpose that site, if they're not bringing coal in, they don't need the rail line. The rail line goes through town. It can become a rails to trails project. It could be a lot of things, but it's a corridor that goes all the way from Hillsboro to down through downtown Carrboro. It's 9 miles long. I've actually ridden the train back in the early 2000s. The train can only go 10 miles an hour because the tracks aren't that good. And so it takes about an hour. It's a really nice ride through Orange County. The other thing is that because of all the climate legislation that both the state and the federal governments have passed, there's a lot of money for decarbonizing. There's a lot of money for conversion. The university knows it. And I think that they're ready to make a move. I just don't think they're ready to make a big move. And they'll make an incremental move. And I think that's a mistake. And I think if the town begins a conversation to say, what could we do with this rail line corridor? What could we do with this 12-acre site in downtown Chapel Hill, and then this whole cement plant idea, 20 acres or so in downtown Carrboro? You could put some folks there.
For sure.
If you want to lower your carbon input in transportation, put people closer to where they work.
How much of this, it's a UNC plant, is the property that it's on also, does UNC own that property?
Yeah, and the rail line's owned mostly by the state. There are some sidings that are owned by Norfolk Southern.
So what's the town do in this circumstance? What can the town do other than have a conversation, as you said?
It's the town has a conversation, comes up with part of the carrot. We've never had a carrot, you know, right, other than the moral, you know, importance of doing this, the planetary importance for doing this, and, you know, the health reasons for public health reasons for doing it. There hasn't been a real big what happens after think. They've looked at what happens if the rail line goes away and looked at using rail transit. There's a lot of issues with that because of the at-grade crossings. But I think we really need to have some put some imagination into the future here, the real possible future, and use that to help drive the conversation, because there are going to be people who are going to put the hammer down on the university to get off of coal. And the students are on it, and there's a big effort, and it will, you know, it will ebb and flow if there's nothing that the university can do, you know, if there aren't options for them. We have to create those options.
We're visiting with veteran North Carolina journalist Kirk Ross, and we're talking about the coal plant that UNC owns over on Cameron Avenue. And you can find the column that was written by Kirk Ross in the Town Square section of chapelboro.com. Where else can your work be found, Kirk?
If you want to look up all my old climate stories and things like that, you can go to my Substack, and there's a link to Coastal Review Online. There's actually, at my Substack is New Hope City. I don't know, it just sounded like a nice name for a Substack, and I didn't want to say Chapel Hill, and I didn't want to say Carborough, and you guys have been through all that.
Oh, yeah. You had to make up a new word, right?
You had to invent up a new word, yeah. New Hope City, and that's the name of the Substack. You can go there, and you can find me on Twitter as long as Twitter's around, and I just invite folks, if they can, to take a few minutes and read this essay, because I've been mulling this argument around for a while, and I think I put it in kind of a nice, concise way, or a concise way. I don't know how nice it is.
Not a very nice subject, I guess.
Yeah, well, but I think it's a positive thing to do, and I think it's what I really hope people take away from this is that I mean, I was at the legislature for 10 years. I know what frustration over the legislature is about. And I've seen it live and up close. And if I'm sitting here telling you it's possible, please pay attention to that. That there is a possibility this can be done. And I think the university is, that this argument is not falling on deaf ears.
Here we go. Kirk Ross says it is time that the university may be listening on moving on from the coal plant. Thank you so much for making the time to come in. We got like 30 seconds left. Is there anything that you haven't mentioned yet that you want to get out there?
Well, I mean, going forward, you know, I've been talking to Greg Meyer about this, and he's working on some outreach. And so I think going forward, we'll probably come up with a little bit more concrete set of proposals, or maybe some guidelines and some thoughts, and try to get the towns to maybe have their own conversations about it, or a larger community gathering about it. I'd just like to kind of keep the ball in the air. I know the students are really behind it, and I think people are ready to make this change.
North Carolina journalist Kirk Ross has been our guest. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. Really.